This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Raw with John Pollock and waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Raw for Monday night, downloaded Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Raw for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade take the mic.
Way, I feel like we just did, we were just speaking to the international audience, and now we are back for all to see. But man, you should never miss the commercial breaks at Rewind to Raw. We just did a 36-minute commercial, mainly talking about Dwayne Johnson and Ryan Nemeth.
Yeah, although it's a bit more sort of a control than maybe perhaps like Excalibur on Triller, or I should say maybe Taz on Triller. We're a bit more professional sometimes.
Wei does some singing every now and then.
Sure. Yeah.
Lots of stuff. Well, Wei is a busy man this week. He is going to be coming back on Tuesday. Do you know what is on tap for the wellness policy for this month's edition?
We have a guest.
Oh.
Yeah. But the topic is actually a bit more open these days. I think we're attempting just to kind of like talk and not really have so much of a direction.
Okay.
So tune in and find out. We'll have a topic afterwards.
Well, I look forward to it. It's always a must listen with Jordan Goodman, Neil Flanagan, and Wei Ting.
1 o'clock, youtube.com/postwrestling.
Okay, check that out. 1 o'clock on Tuesday. Also want to make mention that later this week, I will be putting this up on the site for everybody, but if you are a member at postwrestlingcafe.com, you can already get a sneak peek of this now. It is my historical look at the WWE in Toronto as they get set for their return this weekend, what should be a gate record for the company in this country. I go back to kind of the history of pro wrestling in Toronto, even pre-1984, the promoters at Maple Leaf Gardens, the impact of Ed Farhat, the Sheik, when he was, you know, the mainstay at Maple Leaf Gardens, the switchover, Mid-Atlantic being kind of the staple there, and then Vince McMahon essentially taking over the city in 1984, teaming with Tunney Sports and becoming the most successful promotion in Toronto, and big high points along their tenure, including the big event, which coincidentally, the WWE Vault just uploaded the show the other day from the grounds of the CNE, plus the WrestleManias that took place here and kind of the whole television history as well of WWE. So that is up, both a written version and audio. So later this week, it'll be up for everybody on the site. But if you're so inclined to check it out, you can do so now at postwrestlingcafe.com.
I take it this is Dan the Mouth Oransky's ticket stub.
It is. He had emailed me this when you and I did our review of this show many years ago, and I saved it in my email. So, yes, this is a Dan Lavransky ticket from 1986 that he kept.
Admission.
$20, which was, I think, the most expensive ticket. So take that, Mark Shapiro.
$20 admission and the ticket fee, 25-cent CNE user's fee. Look at that.
Yes, amazing. So there you have it, folks. 1986. $20, I don't think would even get you a beer at Elimination Chamber. That is not an exaggeration either.
Mm-mm. Yeah, maybe not.
Staying on that front, while we're talking about the history of Toronto wrestling, this Wednesday on Pollock and Thurston, joining us for the first time will be Greg Oliver from Slam Wrestling. So we're going to be chatting a little bit about Toronto wrestling history with Greg and several other topics as well. Greg Oliver, the proprietor of Slam Wrestling, a great resource for all things professional wrestling. And also Thursday, we will be launching the book club. This will be for Double Double and Espresso members on the cafe. Neil Flanagan and I will be reviewing There's Just One Problem by Brian Gewirtz, chronicling his 16 years in WWE creative, his battles with Vince McMahon, Triple H, Vince Russo, Paul Heyman, lots of stories from 1999 through 2015 through the eyes of Brian Gewirtz. So we will be chatting about that on the debut edition of the book club. So you can catch all of that. And before we get to Raw, I also want to give a plug to our good friends at Poison Rana, because this Saturday, folks, it's the lock-in. The Elimination Chamber tailgate happening at Gabby's this Saturday, 2 p.m. If you're going to Elimination Chamber, this is the real kickoff show. 2 p.m., 309 King Street West. There's no cover to get in for this at Gabby's. Get to meet Braden and Davey in the flesh. They're going to have karaoke, prizes, drink specials, as always. So this will be the most happening event this coming Saturday in Toronto if you're a wrestling fan.
Yeah, and I feel like $20 will get you a beer, if not probably several, at Gabby's. So if you don't want to pay those prices at the event, check out the lock-in.
Yes, you will gain a soul if you go check out the lock-in. So that's all happening this week. And yes, we will have lots of coverage throughout the week.
Yes, we will. Well, I guess I will.
You will, yes.
John will be off on a much deserved vacation later on this week, but I will be here with a variety of special guests that will be trying to fill his big shoes.
Well, I look forward to hearing all of it. So we will now make our way into Monday's edition of Raw, taking place from the Heritage Bank Center in Cincinnati, Ohio. The final number for WrestleTix was 12,071, and the number they announced on the broadcast was only slightly above this. It was like 12,200 and change, so very close. This marks, way, 8 episodes of Raw this year. All 8 have hit at least 12,000.
Amazing.
Quite the run that they are on. Money. Lots of money. Logan Paul begins the show. He is berated by boos and notes that he is from Ohio, too, and proceeds to insult Cincinnati, calling them peasants, and says that they waste talent like Joe Burrow, and then goes to talk about Elimination Chamber when he is interrupted by CM Punk, and out comes Punk with a Chicago Teachers Union shirt. The only union representation on this particular program on this night. And I don't know if Linda McMahon was sporting this at her confirmation hearing. I don't think she was, as I recall. And he gets into the ring. Paul asks if Punk is jealous of him. Says, "I succeed in everything I do outside of wrestling, while you seem to fail upward." Punk says, "I don't know you. I don't have a problem with you because it's just business. And I look at you, you're a dime a dozen. You do stupid and ignorant things for the shock of it," without dropping examples. "And you have no character, no substance. The people deserve better." And then Logan says that Punk cracked under the pressure last year when he was injured. And it's only a matter of time when they are chanting my name instead of Austin, Cena, or Punk. And Punk says, "The three of us, we are legends who make history under pressure. You're barely a flash in the pan. You're not even going to be here long enough for the fans to figure out who you are. I'm going to eliminate you in the chamber. Then I'm going to win it, go to challenge Cody Rhodes, and there I'm going to win the title at Mania, making history while you're going to be history. Even if Cody has to sell his soul, I will beat him." And Punk says, "I am Satan himself." And Paul is a nobody. It's too bad that he gave this line, because calling himself Satan himself might have gotten included in that complaint if he had stated it last week. So Paul, just standing there, winds up and power slaps this guy right in the face and just flees the ring.
As might have actually drawn blood.
Drew blood, dude. They did this close up of Punk, and I don't know if like he bit his lip or bit his tongue, but there was definitely blood from this. So that was an unexpected bleeding that we got on Monday, and Punk just told him to use his legs while he still can, because you're locked in a cage with me. And that was our setup. I still think that we're getting some kind of singles match between these two. And I would look at that again, that Madison Square Garden show, that seemed that would be maybe an appropriate venue for a CM Punk match on Netflix. And Logan Paul would be your leading contender for that. But these two have had like a good little buildup for this chamber on Saturday.
I think so. I think they're making, they did a good job here making their dynamic a bit more personal, reminding us about the Rumble elimination. Also did a good job of putting some attention onto some bigger potential programs for each of them. Punk mentioning Cody, Paul mentioning Cena, him making specific mention of Cena certainly will lead you to think that they're doing Cena versus Punk at some point. Now, given all the Rock stuff, I mean, I don't know if we can necessarily assume that John Cena will win the Rumble to beat Cody anymore.
The Chamber, yeah.
Yes, the Chamber anymore. And therefore, should we look a little bit deeper into perhaps a Logan Paul as a potential opponent for Cena?
I'll say this to the Rock's promo. It makes anything impossible to assume.
Mm-hmm.
They could go with anything. Maybe yeah, we'll be talking about maybe R-Truth will win the Chamber.
No, I don't know about that, but
maybe the winner will announce Cody Rhodes, you and me at WrestleMania. No punches, no kicks, no match. And they're going to point to a microphone for WrestleMania. That's what I'm looking forward to. Who's not going to have the match? Ludwig Kaiser, Pete Dunne, and Penta in a three-way match. Very good match that these three had, and they actually got some time to this as well. Kaiser drop kicks Dunne's arms in, or his one arm into the step. It still throws me off when Michael Cole is listing off Penta's accomplishments and they are limited to his TNA titles that he has held. He's just not a guy. Like, yes, I was watching him in TNA, but that's maybe the last company I associate Penta with as they go through them. But for obvious reasons, that is at the top of the man's resume. Dunne stomps Penta's hand during the break, and then Penta hits the flying head scissors, sending Dunne off the top, flying into Kaiser, and then Penta hits Tope Conheroes to both sides of the ring on both individuals. Kaiser is trying for his swinging DDT, but Penta bends the fingers, and then it's Penta coming off Kaiser's back into a Mexican destroyer on Dunne, super kicks Kaiser and hits the sacrifice. You think he has it won, but then Kaiser returns, sending Penta out of the ring, hits the swinging DDT and pins Dunne in 9 minutes and 20 seconds. Kaiser getting the surprise win, and I guess technically Penta's first loss in WWE.
I guess so, but still hasn't been pinned yet, and maybe that's the reason for the three-way. But a great match, and otherwise a great showcase for Penta, who basically took 90% of this match, especially highlighted by that great destroyer jumping off of Kaiser's back. Seems like Kaiser is probably up next for the title shot here. I'm assuming against a Bron Breakker. So I think the booking makes sense. I mean, Penta, you know, can afford a loss like this.
And you could get a Kaiser-Penta match out of this. But yeah, I thought, you know, for 9 minutes, I thought that these three did. This was a really good match that they had. And yes, Kaiser gets the win. Jackie Redmond interviewed Rhea Ripley to discuss Elimination Chamber and having to get by Io next week. And Io comes in stating that she is going to be champion after next week and go to WrestleMania as champion. So that was our, this might have even been during the commercial break. I don't even know. So this might have been the whole involvement.
I don't think so. I think it was actually
it was for everyone.
On air. Yeah. I'm surprised these two haven't had a match since NXT.
Yeah, know? They mentioned it's been 5 years since they're almost 5 years since they've had a match since NXT. So
yeah, for that reason, I'm almost a little surprised that they'd be doing this on TV instead of like maybe taking one of the pay-per-view slots over the past year. But I mean, I'm looking forward to the match.
You could argue this is the most intriguing match for Rhea of her and the five options at the Chamber, maybe with the exception of Belair.
Perhaps, yeah.
New Day come out and they cut a promo talking about Big E. Throwing him out of the group was the best move for their careers. LWO should have done the same for Ray. And Joaquin Wilde and Cruz del Toro are their opponents. And we got some backstory on Xavier Woods that when he was an amateur wrestler in high school, he had an inferiority complex because he wore goggles for wrestling and got called a four-eyed nerd. So then Pat McAfee constantly called him a nerd. Maybe right. that's what we're going for with Woods, the nerd.
Hmm. Okay.
Kingston lowers the rope on Del Toro.
I feel like they kind of own the nerd thing for their gimmick.
You know? Well, that's, I guess maybe.
No, he's bothered by it because he's a bad guy.
You can't chant gamer at him. Maybe you can chant nerd at him.
Okay.
So LWO, after they beat down on Del Toro, Wild gets the tag. They hit stereo dives. Kingston then rakes the eyes of Wild. There was a lot of eye rakes on this show. While he's on the shoulders, and it leads to Del Toro being hit with the double stomp by Woods as Kingston held him in place, and the New Day get the win in 5:27. Pretty short match. LWO, this was their big match of the month. They got 5 minutes on TV.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a good little match here. Not much reaction for it, but I think that's probably because nobody really doubts.
They didn't have something
here
to chant at the heels. If only they had a term that they could yell at Woods.
Oh, sure. Like four eyes, like that.
Maybe they'll all start wearing goggles to mock him.
Sure. The action was good, though, and I'm assuming the point here is to just show that without Rey Mysterio, the LWO are pretty helpless.
Afterwards, they're attacking Wild and Del Toro when Dragon Lee comes down, but the New Day beat him down too. So great job, Dragon Lee. Judgment Day are in the clubhouse. Everyone's still pissed at everyone. Balor calls last week the most embarrassing day in their entire history, blaming Dominic. Dominic points out how you lost to Seth Rollins. We still need to get a new member. Balor will not hear anything about this new member. Liv can't believe they're all still fighting, noting this is a big week for me. We're going to win the tag titles tonight, and then I'm going to win Elimination Chamber. And Balor brings up the two of them attacking Jade, but we officially get Liv claiming they were not involved in the attack on Jade Cargill. So they have officially denied their involvement.
Mm-hmm. They said we're simply not involved.
It's a pretty
could they be responsible,
denial.
But not? Well, no. Yeah, I that's a pretty blatant denial, I guess. Yeah.
I was waiting for Naomi and Belair to react and say, oh, our bad. Sorry. Shouldn't have jumped to that conclusion. Do you still want the match tonight? Or then we go. And who's in the crowd but Adam Pac-Man Jones?
Yes, of TNA.
Who was the last person I was expecting to see in the crowd on this show? Former TNA tag champion, Adam Pac-Man Jones.
Does he have a Cincinnati history?
Football fans will tell me. I
feel like they keyed it. I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, well, you can... For those that may forget that the TNA brought.
Yeah, Bengals, yeah.
Okay, well, known more so for some of his off-the-field issues that made it very controversial when TNA opted to use him back in 2007. Gunther is in the ring. He has warmed up to the idea of facing Jey Uso at WrestleMania by embarrassing him and ending this yeet circus. So he has handpicked an opponent tonight, and that handpicked opponent is Akira Tozawa. Tozawa comes out, and Gunther says, the source of my frustration with you was getting to the arena today and seeing you working on a TikTok dance. Both of us have a lot in common. We uprooted our lives for WWE. We got in the best shape of our lives, but you waste it by being a goof for these degenerate fans and making wrong choices, just like Jay does. But tonight, you have a chance to earn my respect. And the bell rings and Tozawa just fires up on Gunther until Gunther runs at this incredible speed. And he booted this guy so hard. I thought he murdered this guy. It was the most incredible looking big boot spot. Michael Cole then referenced Les Nessman from WKRP in Cincinnati.
Hmm.
Quite the callback for Michael Cole. Then he attacks with a chop, but Tozawa fights back with a spinning roundhouse kick, gets power bomb, or an attempt at a power bomb is made, but Tozawa turns it into a sunset roll up, and this crowd went nuts for this near fall. Tozawa comes off the top. He's caught in the Boston Crab, but he fights to the rope. The crowd cheers as he makes it, and then another power bomb is attempted. But Gunther lifts him up at the count of two, puts on the sleeper, and does like the Brody King where he lifts him up so his feet are dangling above the mat, and it's called off at 2:48. This was the most entertaining sub-3-minute match that I loved this. I thought this was great.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, anytime they do something like this, it can either be very forgettable or it could be somewhat memorable and very entertaining. I think most famously, like a Taka Michinoku, Triple H comes to mind. And I mean, maybe this wasn't necessarily on that level. I don't know if they achieved a near fall, maybe quite that good, but it was still very entertaining. And you have very
for 3 minutes. I thought this was really entertaining, and yeah. I thought this was like just a really entertaining match for the time it lasted. Gunther looked great. I thought Tozawa, like, I thought he got, like, this was one of Tozawa's highlight of the year for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, part of me hates that somebody so talented is in this sort of role. But, I mean, at this point, I really do actually quite admire the amount of skill required to be an Akira Tozawa in this company in a match like this, you know? He finds himself in a position where he's occupying a role that nobody else is occupying. And I think that's actually pretty cool. You know, he's one of the few guys still here from the CWC.
One of the only ones, yeah.
Support for this podcast comes from NordVPN. Many of our listeners already use Nord to access cheaper prices to AEW pay-per-views or ad-free international versions of WWE programming. But the benefits of a VPN go beyond streaming, especially as online criminal tactics are becoming increasingly sophisticated. One threat that's been on the rise is SIM swapping, where just a bit of your personal info can help criminals impersonate you to your cell provider and virtually transfer your SIM card to their phone. Using a trusted VPN like Nord, especially when using public Wi-Fi, helps keep your data safe from prying eyes on the same network. Over at nordvpn.com/postwrestling, you can sign up for a 2-year plan for just a few dollars per month and get 4 bonus months with our link. Again, nordvpn.com/postwrestling. Try it with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Stay safe and enjoy all the benefits of a secure internet with NordVPN.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Plus, two editions of Rewind Away. We will revisit Bret Hart's heel run in the WWF NXT TakeOver New Orleans from 2018. Plus, we have coverage of AEW Grand Slam Australia, New Beginning in Osaka, an Ask Away, Ask Us Anything mailbag show, and of course, Captain America 4 and Collision Course every single Saturday night. All that and more at postwrestlingcafe.com. Otis then stands up for Tozawa as Gunther is exiting, but then Gunther returns, attacking Otis, putting a sleeper on him. Then Jey Uso arrives, allowing Gunther to exit, and you would think that we will get Gunther and Otis, which will be different than this, but could also be, you know, just quick, and you're keeping Gunther busy because you've got almost 2 months to go, so sure. Then we had a clip of Michael Cole on Impulsive talking about his chemistry with Pat McAfee, and this was a bit to zoom in on Michael Cole's gut hanging out of his shirt on the podcast, and yeah.
Got some laughs in attendance, it seems like.
Cole thought this was hilarious, so he enjoyed this. Lyra Valkyrie against Dakota Kai for the women's Intercontinental title. There was a spot early on here where Lyra hits a delayed vertical off the turnbuckle, and she comes down. She sold this more than Dakota did because she just grabs the back of her head. I don't know if there was something on the landing here, but she looked like she was in just this ungodly pain after delivering the superplex. So then she gets caught with a scorpion kick during an exchange. The GTK is countered, and we just go into multiple pin attempts, including Lyra bridging out from underneath into a powerbomb. Crowd was getting into this. Lyra then leaps into a super kick, is caught with the running boot, and then the chiropractor, which has now been officially embraced by Michael Cole, who called it the chiropractor. Lyra stops a superplex, slides out from underneath, and lifts her up for the Nightwing, winning this match in 7 minutes and 40 seconds.
Really strong match, I felt. You know, I think Lyra, I mean, this run to me has been somewhat forgettable because I think she hasn't really been featured so much as...
This might be her first win since winning the title.
Really? But, you know, she hasn't really received much feature as a personality, not necessarily as somebody like in any sort of significant storyline. But in-ring, of course, is where she really shines and reminds you why she's deserving of this particular spot. I thought the in-ring quality was very strong here. And I think Kai has been having some of the best matches of her entire main roster run during these past few months. So it's nice to see that that unfortunate concussion hasn't really stopped that about her. Like, she's still coming out and like giving full effort in all of these matches. So she's doing really well.
Yeah, this is the case where they over-delivered. The issue here is that you're talking about two characters that are relatively cold, and you're putting them into a situation where they're left to get over with their wrestling, and that's kind of the situation. Like, you cannot.
It's what they both do best.
It is, but I think, like, especially for the introduction of these championships, like, the argument was, well, this is going to give more stories for the various women. It's like, we've added these titles, but they are just there as props without any kind of substance to them at this point. It does make you wonder what will be, like, the next couple of weeks in terms of, like, anything substantive for Elira Valkyria for WrestleMania. Ivy Nile attacks her after the match and lays her out with a spinning sidewalk slam, so Ivy Nile looks poised for the next title shot. And it was time for Jackie Redmond's sit-down interview with Sami Zayn. And he shares how his weekend went. I guess he was watching the USA Network on Friday night and realized, hey, that's our house. Wait, that's us. How did Kevin get outside my house? So Zayn shares that he went to Kevin's house over the weekend, but no one was home. But Kevin's mother was visiting, and she saw him, and they caught up, and they were speaking to one another. And then Sammy got home that night. He was ashamed of himself because he didn't recognize himself for going to Kevin's house with bad intentions, and says, throughout all our past problems, we've never had our families involved. And I don't know what I'm capable of, and I don't know what Kevin is capable of. My neck is not where it wants to be. This is going to be a war. This is going to be insane, he said, in regards to this match, and it will be worse than anything prior that they've done to one another. Kevin, I hope you are ready.
Mm-hmm. I thought Sami Zayn was so great here. I actually thought Jackie was really great, too, with some
of
her reactions.
She's always good in these sit-down segments.
Yeah, she was great. I kind of love that they simply explained Sammy's reaction rather than actually like show us footage of it, which I think, like, you know, they
would have been so considered. Goofy.
Yeah, like, we didn't get the fake wrestling thing where, like, you know, you're getting Sammy having to act angry and then maybe having to like have a camera in front of like Kevin's house and then doing the whole scene. I actually think, like, catching up with Sammy, what, like 2-3 days after the fact, and getting this sort of like, Sammy was so good in this segment because you could tell he himself went on some form of journey over the past few days where, like, he got angry. And this is sort of like the result of shame after feeling that level of anger. And I thought he conveyed it really well and leaves that angry portion just really up to your imagination. So I actually kind of think it's a bit more powerful than having to like get a wrestler to act angry, you know?
It will be very interesting on Friday if you have a final segment involving Owens. If he's going to have to fight that crowd initially, like, I'm sure he will get to a heel reaction, but I mean, you will have the tide against you if it's just Owens himself coming out on SmackDown on Friday when they're in Toronto for the first night. But they've, like, this is one of the like, this is a very, very strong card on Saturday. Like, everyone, like, this has been really well built up and should be a pretty, like, they're essentially promising you this is going to be violent as hell, and this is going to be probably in between those chamber matches somewhere on the show. Kathy Kelly interviewed Bayley and is interrupted by Roxanne Perez, who brags about beating Bayley's record for length in the Royal Rumble, and
that might have been during,
I think it was a commercial. Well, this is what you missed. They both insulted the other having big heads. Literal big heads. And Bayley said, I will see you at WrestleMania, just not this year. So yeah, they're in that special place where they're not going to deliver the match.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I'm going to get my mileage out of that, 'cause it's one of the goofiest things I've heard. Naomi and Belair had a video addressing Liv and Raquel. So keep this straight. They're going to whoop them tonight. They're going to whoop them again at Elimination Chamber, and then we might whoop you a third time just for fun. That's a lot of whooping that they were planning to do. Braun Breaker versus Dominic Mysterio, non-title, with Balor and Carlito in the corner. Braun runs the ropes and lands this big clothesline, and Balor and Carlito yank Dominic to the floor. And then after Braun chases him, they get some brief heat here with Dominic trying to stomp him. And then Balor distracts the referee as Carlito pulls Braun out, allowing Dom to hit a dive. And then after a dropkick, Dominic hits the 619. Braun stops the frog splash and hits the Breakensteiner when Balor and Carlito pull him out and send Braun into the steps for the DQ in 3 minutes, 16 seconds. They battle Braun 3-on-1 when Braun sends Dom over to the floor and then spears Carlito. Carlito owes this guy because he gave him the most protected spear here. And then caught Balor, who was sliding into the ring with a chair. And so just a little like off course, like we were doing all this teasing of AJ and this was all about Braun and Balor. So, I mean, the guy is lining up a bunch of opponents is what it feels like, or something with a bunch of people involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no AJ on this show.
Oh, we can always open the idea of a three-way as well at this point for WrestleMania, especially for a title like this where they have to cram a lot of guys onto the card. I wouldn't completely put that out of the question. I thought this was like one of the more traditional like babyface outings for Braun Breaker, you know, being put into this like 3-on-1 position, especially like because Braun is very much somebody that you could kind of still be a bit of, you know, position as a bit of a tweener, you know, like against an AJ Styles, for instance. But here he was very much in a traditional babyface, you know, situation. Succumbing to like a 3-on-1 position, and I'm sensing more TV for Balor versus Braun, but I mean, we'll see where it leads to.
God bless the person tasked with editing a 90-second recap of the Rock and Cody Rhodes segment from SmackDown. So they did their best here to recap this in as digestible a form as possible, and Michael Cole ended it by saying, "There was a lot of read-through on this past Friday's SmackDown," whatever that meant. Jackie interviews The New Day. I think this was another commercial. They insulted her, said, "Your outfit is terrible," and they are going on vacation to Costa Rica next week where you people can't afford to go. So they, too, are taken off.
He should have just bought a ticket for Elimination Chamber. Most of us couldn't afford that either.
That's true. I mean, Costa Rica might be more affordable than some of these ticket prices. Kelly catches up with Ivy Nile and the Creeds. The Creeds are going after the tag titles next week. Would you ever wear these USA overalls that Julius was sporting with the one strap around the shoulder? Guys auditioning for 1991. I don't know, background dancer for Crisscross or something. So she notes that the Creeds will challenge the War Raiders next week for the tag titles, and Ivy is going to continue attacking Lyra until she gets a title shot. And with that, the War Raiders attack the Creeds. So that is our setup for next Monday in Buffalo. Out comes Cody Rhodes. And here was our segment. Let's make sense of everything. And Cody says, "I think I know what everyone wants to talk about." And that says, and I quote, "What does it mean to ask for one man's soul?" I know that's a rather abstract phrasing. I was getting way too much enjoyment out of this. He says, "I have never lied to you, the people. I'm a blessed man, but this decision I have to make, it affects more than just me. It affects my family." He notes his wife, his daughter, Brody Jr., the Nightmare Factory, my mother, and I've got the memory of my father, who had to work into his 60s, bleeding on the indies, and I don't want that memory to mirror my future. The Rock can give me everything that I need without me having to scratch and claw for it. Now, before we get to the interruption here, I thought this guy did as good a job as he possibly could here to explain, like, why would I even entertain this? I'm rich beyond belief. I'm the top guy in this company, and he's trying to tie it into like Dusty was this major star, and Dusty was broke in the mid 2000s. This has been part of what Cody has spoken about when he, you know, was running like Turnbuckle Championship Wrestling and such. I think it's still like a massive stretch here, but He tried to incorporate something real here to give. He basically had to say, I can't just turn down the Rock now. I've got to wait till Saturday. And this is why I'm not instantly turning this down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought he did a good job of just explaining why he's not immediately shutting the door on whatever proposition the Rock is offering him. And I think he's telling us not to take the soul thing literally, you know, essentially is what he's trying to say. He, I'm taking this more to mean like an exchange for, money and power, that Dwayne Johnson, you know, with his status in Hollywood would be able to afford. I think, you know, Cody, what's consistent about the character is that he's doing all of this for his family. He's doing all of this for, well, Nightmare family and his real family. He's doing this for the legacy of his last name, and the type of offer that the Rock is giving him is some form of status, some form of, you know, power that'll afford Cody some form of generational wealth and status and power, you know, a chance to
Instagram followers too.
I mean,
hook him up with some bots.
That's easy to achieve, yeah. But, you know, it's a lot more sort of effective in hearing Cody talk about, like, the effect on his family rather than just kind of talking about Instagram followers, right? It's a chance to extend the legacy of his father's name, and I guess that's through, what, like, Hollywood opportunities and shit like that?
Even when Rollins comes out, it's not like they could easily spell it out. It's not like this guy's... Put it this way, there was nothing that Cody could say that The Rock can offer him that is going to have the fans cheering if he accepted this from The Rock. Like, there's no conceivable way.
He's not going to accept.
Well, he's not going to, but that's the problem, is he is tasked with trying to give a devil's advocate argument in this. And I thought he did what he could here.
We want to see our heroes be tempted with the easy way out, and we want them to turn it down. And he at least has to, you know, set it up that he's tempted by it.
So Seth comes out and notes that they have not been in the same ring together for nearly a year since WrestleMania. And I would like to be out here to congratulate you, to shake your hand, or say that I'm going to win the chamber and face you at Mania. But that's not why I'm here. What the hell are you thinking? We went to battle last year with Rock and Reigns. And by you not instantly slapping the Rock in the face, that was a slap to my face. And don't make me regret sacrificing everything so that you could become champion last year. And for what? Bit roles in his movies and followers on Instagram? Is the title becoming too much of a burden for you, Cody? Because it wouldn't be a burden for me. And Cody stops him and says, you're starting to sound judgmental. The Rock came to SmackDown and he asked for my soul, not yours, because yours might be compromised. He reminds Rollins, you once attacked me with a sledgehammer and turned on the Shield, joining the Authority, and ran people like me out of WWE. And I also know that you were my Shield, my partner, and my brother at WrestleMania 40. You were the MVP of WrestleMania last year. So Rollins says, I might be here to protect you from the mistakes I made in the past. I'm so filled with hate lately, mainly pointed at Punk and Reigns. Don't make me hate you. I want to win the chamber and face you, but I want to face the Cody Rhodes that came back, beat me at WrestleMania 38, dug down and beat me with one arm, and the guy who won the title last year. I'm not coming for your soul. I'm coming for your title. I wish he pointed and did the opposite of Dwayne on Friday. This whole I'm coming for your soul, like, it is going to be one of the lines of the year, I think.
Oh, they're clearly embracing it and embracing, perhaps. I mean,
they kind of have to. I mean, it's such a dominant description. Like, it is the meme probably of this promo.
Probably designed to be memeable and to be catchy. I mean, it's you know, on the one hand, I think easy to kind of make fun of, but by them embracing it, they're kind of owning it and actually kind of making it like a cool, memorable thing about this particular feud.
It's like that year they really went all out with the most stupendous WrestleMania of all time. Remember that?
Sure. Yes. Or like the greatest match of all time.
Oh,
you know
that one too.
Yeah. I thought this segment with Rollins and Cody was excellent, and it kind of makes me miss the chemistry that Cody had with like the current roster on Raw between like Rollins and like a Sami Zayn. Like on SmackDown, Punk. He's got a Punk. You know, on SmackDown, Cody has a great partner in like Kevin Owens. Occasionally, maybe like a Roman Reigns, although not to this level even. But man, I just kind of miss these sort of Cody promo segments with like the great crop of guys you have on Raw.
I think there's a good shot that we're going to be seeing plenty of Cody on Raw for this build up to Mania. I think like this will be mm-hmm. where like we know Cena's got the dates on Raw, and I think you will be seeing him.
Did they come up with a reason for why he's able to be on Raw past the transfer window?
Who's this?
Cody.
Oh, no, you're just, you know. It's
whatever. He's famous, right? I thought Rollins did a great job digging more out of Cody, like, you know, just to kind of like make this whole soul thing feel a little bit more real. You know, it's more of a question about why you are choosing to follow this guy rather than why are you choosing to give your soul to this guy. I thought Cody did a great job of pointing out Rollins' hypocrisy since he became himself a corporate champion when he turned on the Shield. So it was great usage of their own WWE history to draw some of these parallels. I love that Rollins following up is saying that maybe I'm here to tell you what to not make the same mistakes that I made. There's some really great, like, you know, backstory storytelling from both of them here. So these writers, I'm sure, were handed this very late into the week, and over the past weekend they did a great job of taking the material that the Rock and Cody gave us on Friday, turning it into I think a very cohesive segment here tonight.
I think they did as much as they could with this, but I think overall I think like there's a larger issue if in fact this is a case that we have our TV laid out, we have our directions laid out, and we just have to play reaction because something gets dropped on us. Like, this feels like if you were following OVW in the early 2000s, and this was famous, where, you know, there would be call-ups out of nowhere that would send Jim Cornette having to spiral to make sense of this stuff. He would have guys that were feuding on his TV brought up as the Bashams to team together, and he had to somehow, every week it became this way to make sense of all this stuff. Like, yeah. It's impressive to watch, but it's not ideal for a creative process. And I just get the sense that like this is like, are you confident that like all parties are on the same page and we're all going in the same direction and we all know 3 steps, 4 steps, 5 steps ahead? Or is there a lot of just like this feels very much just like we are reacting to what is thrust upon us?
So, of course, I agree with that, John. You know, ideally, a show is written and planned out and executed exactly as planned. But we don't know what the demands of a Dwayne Johnson career is. It's sort of unprecedented. Even a John Cena schedule isn't necessarily like a Dwayne Johnson schedule. I can imagine, again, being the star level that he is, I can imagine them telling Dwayne, if you're available, if you suddenly find out with 24 hours that you're available, give us a call. We will write you into our show. And it's to the company's benefit that they would ultimately, it's to their benefit that they would find a role for him, even if it's on a 24-hour notice. Right, John? So not to mention the fact that like this is kind of what professional wrestling is. You deal with injuries, you deal with like, you know, people suddenly not showing up, you deal with like just the unknown all the time, and you write around it. That's what makes professional wrestling so interesting and so unique. So I don't necessarily think that they might get frustrated at times, but at the same time, it's also sort of like ingrained in what a professional wrestling writing job entails.
Ultimately, it's if the end product is satisfying to your audience and it's mm-hmm. effective, it doesn't matter what the circumstances are. You're judging the end product. And yeah. I think people saw Friday a glimpse into a story that they were not sinking their teeth into, that they were not necessarily interested in.
But the end product is, well, the alternative is not having Dwayne Johnson attached at all. And I would argue a lot of people would prefer to have Dwayne Johnson attached.
I don't think it's a either or. I think that you could have had a segment with The Rock. You could do a segment with Cody Rhodes, and it's not met with such a universal panning as Friday had, that people would be excited for what is happening.
So for me, I don't know what their full story is, so I'm not necessarily bashing it on that. I didn't like Friday because of The Rock's performance. I thought it was too loose and too messy. And not, I don't want to say, like, rehearsing is sort of like a dirty word when it comes to professional wrestling, but I thought he needed a little bit of rehearsing, a little bit more preparedness. That's why I was disappointed in it. But we don't know what the end story is, and we'll find out on Saturday, I guess. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
We go backstage. Alpha Academy is being tended to. Well, Otis, Natalya, and Maxine are with Tozawa, who is being tended to. And then Jay walks in, telling him he fought his heart out. He's proud of him. And then Jay walks out, and A-Town Down Under are just hanging out. And Waller runs down Jay, says, "You only care about yourself. You're a meme. You're not on Gunther's level. The locker room and, quote, smart people online know that you don't have a chance against Gunther. You're going to be embarrassed at WrestleMania." And Jay says,
"Are you a smart person online, John?"
No, I'm definitely not. I'm told on a daily basis I'm not. He says that everyone doubts him, but will beat Gunther. And he gives his big speech to the point that even Theory is about to do the yeet. And Waller just looks at him and gets super kicked. And that was that.
So Jay Uso's got the Alpha Academy. Sorry, Gunther has the Alpha Academy. Jay Uso has A-Town Down Under as their sort of distractions away from each other.
Yeah, he might not even have to go through Theory. It seemed like he converted Theory in this segment. This might have been his babyface turn for all we know, but we'll at least get him and Waller maybe on TV. And then Bianca Belair and Naomi against Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez for the women's tag title. So this, the bell rang at 10:25 p.m. And I was thinking, like, there is no way they're cramming this into 4 to 5 minutes. And in fact, we got, I think, our first Netflix overrun, and it kind of benefited because you got all these big near falls, and I think you were believing half of them because you just figured that they were going to be ending this show pretty soon. So, I mean, the first couple of minutes of this match, really the first half, wasn't too much to write home about. Belair and Naomi kind of were double-teaming Liv, tossing Raquel into the timekeeper's area. And then we just, like, kicked this into gear. After Belair goes for this 450, and she comes down on Raquel, and it looked like her knee just caught Raquel here, and they showed the replay of it as well. Raquel then kicks Naomi off the apron after recovering, and we just get all these counters. There's a KOD attempt, but Belair gets raked in the eyes. Belair then is hit with a super code breaker by Liv, and that's our first of many, many near falls. And that, and this crowd was just going insane for some of these kickouts. There were so many near falls, so many saves. We had Naomi... first of all, Raquel saves Liv and hits Naomi with a Tahana bomb, which sets up Oblivion, but then Belair makes the save. Crowd goes nuts for that. Belair then spears Raquel. All of the four are down, and they go for a double-team KOD when Dominic shows up, and he gets Liv's foot onto the rope. Belair goes after Dominic, tries for the KOD to Raquel, but gets dumped onto the desk. And then Naomi blocks Oblivion, more near falls, hits the rear view, head kicks Dominic, and then goes for the split-legged moonsault, which Raquel is in the corner to block, and rams Naomi's head into the post. And the ref misses all of this, allowing Liv to pin Naomi 12 minutes and 12 seconds. And wouldn't you know it, during this overrun, they got to load in pyro just in case. And we got a big pyro display for the new champions, Liv and Raquel, as the show went off the air.
Well, when you say overrun, you just mean like longer than the usual length that Netflix is at, right? Because they don't have a hard out.
They've been ending the show pretty much at like 10:30 every week. Like
on the dot?
Pretty much, yeah. Right. Like they've never gone this long, okay. Except for that first week, I believe. So anyway.
I mean, it is entirely flexible and really up to
them. I don't know how flexible it is for them. Like they've kept it to like this length, but I mean, obviously tonight they had the ability to go over and they did. So, really, the crowd got really hot for this. Like for the final, like 5-6 minutes, like they were into all of these saves and near falls.
I thought this was an excellent match. like way beyond my expectations for, I think, what I've seen previously of both teams. I thought they did such a great job of building to near falls and gave us a lot of creativity in these counters. Something as simple as like Naomi holding onto the ropes, hooking onto the ropes to prevent the oblivion, or finally here with Raquel just holding onto Naomi's foot in order to prevent the split-legged moonsault. I really liked. I thought there were several really well-designed counters, and they're all very quickly executed by everybody involved. So it resulted in some excellent near falls, and overall, I have to say, an excellent match. So I'd love for them to run this one back. Now, storyline wise, of course, things are, you know, continue to be interesting. They lose the championships, which leaves Belair and Naomi free to pursue whatever singles programs may come their way. The Chamber, you know, like, are we approaching the point where we will find out an answer to this Jade Cargill mystery? And can it be somehow on Saturday? If not, soon after?
I don't think it's going to be that soon. I think that's they're still going to let this one run out a bit. But I think it frees them up for wherever.
Will it be WrestleMania that we get the match coming out of the reveal? Or WrestleMania.
You want to see a match at the end of this? Sorry, I will stop. I've hit my quota now. I would think that, yeah, you would want it sewn up by then. I think that's...
So it would have to be in these few weeks?
Well, we have a lot of these few weeks before WrestleMania. So, I mean, they have plenty of time to get to this. But I would think we're like on the cusp. Like, I think this thing has really played itself out. I think the titles are off them now. And then however you book this Elimination Chamber, which is kind of like, you could go many different ways in this chamber and ultimately getting to whatever the payoff is with the assailant and Jade's return.
Yeah. And just very quickly, because John won't be here on Friday, we will talk about maybe just the card so far. Five matches, or we should say how many matches here. So we got the men's chamber here. Damian Priest, Logan Paul, Seth Rollins, Drew McIntyre, John Cena, and CM Punk. Any pick from you, John?
I think Cena is like the obvious one, unless there's a late thought of, you know, he can go for this title at SummerSlam. He can go for this title at a later date. But that would be, I think you want to do it for his last main. I just feel like it's such a diminished role for him. Like, you're building this around, this is Cena's last WrestleMania, and you can put him in another match, but I think that kind of takes the air out of things. The only other option is Punk. Like, if you don't go this three-way, you could do Reigns and Rollins. You could get away with doing that, and I think there's a solid dynamic with Cody and Punk, but I would lean towards Cena and then Punk going elsewhere. You've got Rollins in this match, so I think this one's going to be really, really well booked. They've done a great job of pretty much having everyone interact with Cody in the lead up to this, minus Cena, but Cena's story is right there. You didn't need to do a segment with him and Cody in the lead up to this like that. Yeah, I imagine that this goes on last, and unless there's some storyline reason not to put it on last, but it does remain in question if like we get that, yeah, the big visual at the end of the night of Cody coming out and standing with the winner, and then we start our build and how The Rock is incorporated into this now.
I wonder if they'll actually do The Rock segment last. You know, we shall see.
It's possible. That is like the main event of the show now.
Yeah, yeah. But that whole storyline suddenly makes the men's chamber a lot more interesting because, you know, yes, we might all be expecting John Cena to win because he's going for his final championship at WrestleMania. But the prospect of The Rock managing one of these men to go up against Cody is suddenly, I think, opens up the possibilities that much more. And, you know, chief among the candidates with that particular storyline, I don't necessarily think is John Cena, because I don't see Cena turning heel. I think CM Punk is a prime, you know, prospect to be managed by The Rock, or at least to be backed by The Rock.
What's the rationale? If Punk wins this match, is he winning this match?
He's desperate.
But he wins the match. Is he winning because of The Rock's help?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Because in theory, whoever wins this match really doesn't need any help. They've achieved the match at WrestleMania.
Okay. I mean, I don't know if it would be that direct, but, you know, you could have Dwayne help him out or somehow. And it's John, it doesn't even have to culminate into a match. Okay. It's just, you know, it is just.
This is a whole new way of thinking about pro wrestling that I had never given any thought till I watched that press conference over the weekend. Continue through.
What's next? We got the women's chamber here. We got Alexa Bliss. We've got Liv Morgan, Bianca Belair, Roxanne Perez, Bayley, and Naomi.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm most interested in, like, if Io Sky was in this match, I think that's the one I'd be leaning towards. I don't look at anyone here as that strong of a Rhea Ripley level opponent for WrestleMania beyond Belair, who just seems like she is wrapped up in this whole other story at this point. Now, she could win this, and that's still kind of intertwined with the Jade stuff and maybe causing a rift with Naomi. There's ways you can go about this, but I would not say that this is one where I'm just looking at one person as this obvious pick. It doesn't feel like Alexa or like Bayley would not be that pick for me. Liv and Rhea to me has just, we are not clamoring to go back to a feud that dominated so much of the last year. Perez feels like a kind of just too soon for that level at this point. Not out of the question, but yeah, this is a weird one. Unless we're going to get some weird surprise and there's another entrant in this.
Yeah, this one's a bit tougher to call because there's not really an obvious pick. I think Alexa is probably the most interesting participant here, but I can't see Rhea going up against another fan favorite just yet. So I don't necessarily think it would be her, although I do expect her to have some sort of Rumble, Mania presence with the Wyatts. I'm kind of looking at either Bianca or Naomi. And somehow Rhea Ripley maybe being tied into this entire Jade Cargill reveal. How they will do that dance, I have no idea. But I also don't rule out the idea that, like,
if you had Naomi win this, she's the one that took the fall, and it's later revealed, like, you could go with the reveal that it was Belair that took out Jade for Naomi, and I gave you this tag title, you cost us this, and now instead of us going back for these tag titles, you're going for the women's title. Like, there's an interesting story
there.
Could
we do a double finish, double pinfall, resulting in a three-way between Rhea with Naomi and Bianca?
I don't see that one happening. I mean, could get to a three-way. I just don't see a double finish in this chamber match.
Why not?
I think it'd be really unsatisfying to do. Like a double pin at the end of this? Yeah, I don't know about that one.
Okay, we'll see.
Maybe I'll look foolish on Saturday.
Then we've got Trish Stratus teaming up with Tiffany Stratton, taking on Candice LeRae and Nia Jax.
This is a real weird one, because you feel like Charlotte needs to be somewhat of a background player here. This is kind of just its own thing. You could always shoot an angle with Trish for something more. I don't think Trish is just doing this one show. It does feel like she's doing this 25th anniversary deal. I would think at some point this year, during this run, I do think they're going to, I don't think they did that Money in the Bank tease last year for no reason, that you won't get to Trish and Tiffany at some point. But I don't know if you're going to shoot that angle here in Toronto. You could just do, the match and Tiffany gets the win, or Trish gets the win. Candice is probably there to take the fall. But I do see some kind of angle with Trish involved to get her to Mania, and whether that is you do something here, potentially.
I don't know if I just see Trish having a role at Mania. Honestly, I guess I'm just not really sure where she would necessarily fit in, unless it would be in like a tag capacity, but that wouldn't be with Stratton. I see maybe Stratton versus Trish as a program coming out of WrestleMania, perhaps, and maybe this is just sort of like, you know, the thing you do to make that team feel like it has more of a storied history. I kind of see this more as just a hometown reaction, maybe Trish getting the pinfall and just having like a big sort of moment in Toronto for all involved. All right, let's go up next to Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens, unsanctioned.
Oh, it's unsanctioned. Can there be a winner? There's no referee. Isn't that what they said?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure.
This will be interesting, the positioning on this card. I think this is going to be a, like, if you have some reason to not put the men's match on last, but your idea of putting the Rock thing on last, that would not surprise me at all, that segment going on last. But regardless of placement, I think this one's going to get a lot of time. I think some people are looking at this, oh, this is just going to be a holdover till they do the real match at Mania. They're like, you're getting, I would be stunned if you're not getting a full all-out match here. And I think that, like, they have promoted this as the big grudge match on the show, and they've done a pretty effective job of it. It's not to say they can't extend it beyond the chamber, but I think you're going to get a full-on match here. And I guess the big question is, it's unsanctioned, and the idea of Randy Orton, like, if he should be ready to come back soon, it's about time for him to come back. And if he gets involved in this program, or you just set this off where Owens goes off with Orton and Sammy goes off with Karrion Kross, maybe that's our dividing line. Like, those are, like, Karrion Kross is all over the Sami Zayn character. So there's a lot of options for these guys coming out of this, and very good chance that they're not tied for Mania. And this might mean more to them than doing Mania together is here in Toronto. You're gonna have a real, like, lively crowd for this, and for that reason, I could certainly see a Zayn losing and continuing this this kind of descent for him, like losing on these big stages, and here's one, like, here you are in Canada and losing to your rival again. Like, that's more the story they're telling with Sami Zayn rather than having Kevin lose this this match to Sami.
I could see that, yeah. But I could also see Randy Orton coming in and somehow getting involved and costing Kevin Owens a match.
You could also save that for TV. Like, you could also do that coming out of this. Like, there's ways around it, but there's definitely that option.
I'm interested just to kind of see, like, the creativity that they employ in this sort of, I would assume, like, Falls Count Anywhere type of atmosphere, like brawling all through the Rogers Center, and just diving off of, like, who knows what, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they can probably explore the whole stadium and do a lot with that. And then, and then we have the main event of the show.
Yeah, The Rock.
Yeah. I don't think, he might get booed, much like the last time he was at the Rogers Center in 2002. True. So,
yeah.
Look at the size of this guy in this photo. Oh, my massive. God.
Yeah.
So here's the question, is that if your expectation is that Cody is going to reject this offer, mm-hmm. is he laying this guy out with a crossroads at the end? Is that, like, the big moment to cap off this segment?
I don't think it necessarily has to end that way.
Does it end with any physicality?
A just slap.
Gonna turn him down and Rock's gonna say, okay,
bye. Maybe a slap, you know. I mean
slap is kind of, yeah, that does,
I think
maybe Rock end. Slaps Cody when he turns him down.
And I think to heat up the match, I think you might have The Rock continue to lay attack Cody again, or maybe The Rock surrogate coming out and attacking Cody. This guy's about to be in a Scorsese film. I don't think he's gonna, you know, do too much physical, but I mean, we'll see.
Okay. Well, maybe Leonardo DiCaprio will be his surrogate for WrestleMania. No?
Leonardo DiCaprio against Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, possible.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
All these options. We'll see. We'll see what they do. All right. So that's Elimination Chamber. Wei will be here on Saturday night, and he will be reviewing Elimination Chamber.
Yeah, I'll be joined by Brother Nate Milton.
Whoa.
So he'll be joining me. Neil Flanagan will be joining me on Friday, and on Monday we'll have Davey Portman joining us. So that is the temporary schedule with John Pollock on a much deserved vacation this week. Kate will be joining me on the Wednesday next week.
Awesome stuff. Well, before we go, we have some feedback here at forum.postwrestling.com. We're starting off with Brian. And,
of course, bye-bye to all of
you. Oh, yeah. Get out of here. Sorry, everyone. Bye.
See you guys.
We'll talk to you later.
Talk to you soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.